All right, so this is the final day of our presentation, and we've been talking a lot about making it easy for people to come to Krishna consciousness. Today I want to especially talk about how we make it easy for people to grow in Krishna consciousness in a natural, unartificial, unforced, and contrived way. Now, I think at this point, most of you have some idea that it's possible to build up a steady clientele or steady customer base of people coming to your center, or their center, if you have the right ingredients, if you are properly addressing the needs and desires of the people in such a way that they get Krishna while coming to fulfill their needs and desires, then you're going to have a steady group of people coming by, you know, three times a week, sometimes even more, after university schedules finished for the day, after their work, whatever. People like to hang out. They like to talk with others. They like to eat. And so you're going to offer elements of life that they are looking for. But it's going to be, these elements of life are going to be administered by devotees, served to them by devotees who genuinely want to care. This is a very important thing. Meanwhile, I'm talking, can someone pass these out to everyone? One each to everyone. Oh, thank you. Okay. I don't want us to gloss over this point, which I feel is very much missing these days in our Krishna conscious society. The heartfelt desire to reach out and care for others. Even if someone doesn't have this spontaneously in the beginning, which is nothing unusual, out of appreciation for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's representatives, we try to develop this care and concern for others to the extent that we even want to expend a major part of our life reaching out to others and caring for others. Only with this kind of dedication can urban preaching be successful. Because, as we discussed, cities are hellish. They're noisy. They're disturbing. They're not tranquil. They're not calm. So they just leave you as a devotee who's accustomed to at least the mode of goodness, sattva-gun. Cities leave you with that feeling, you know, we got to get out of this place. You know, we got to get an apartment at Radhadesh, or, you know, we got to get a house nearby Radhadesh. Forget these cities, you know, hellish. Cities leave you with that feeling. So unless you have this heartfelt conviction to reach out to others, even while you're undergoing some inconvenience, urban preaching won't happen. It can't happen mechanically. I'm sure some of you know the difference in book distribution, sankirtan, when the heart of the devotee's into it and when not. Or any kind of service, puja, cooking, even raising children. I mean, it's not my ashram, but I can tell. I've seen mothers who just don't like being mothers and they just go through the whole thing mechanically, and I've seen mothers who are really into it. My own mother, she was really into being a mother. So anything you put your heart into, that's what makes it go. That's what makes it attractive. So I don't want to just overlook that point or make it so that you forget that the main thing is this determination to care for others, to reach out, even though you're experiencing some inconvenience in the process. Lord Chaitanya makes it so sweet that even though you're in an inconvenient situation because you're trying to invest your heart into fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's desires, you taste actually the best pleasure without trying for your own pleasure. So let's look at this famous verse by Prahlad Maharaj. I know you all know this verse, but there's some things in the purport that I'd like to highlight that we all think about. Naido dvije para dharatjaya vaitaranyas tadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta shoche tatova mukacheta sa indriyata maya sukaya bhadam udvahato vimudhan. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. You notice this powerful emotional statement saturated with knowledge, or else you could say it's a powerful knowledge statement saturated with emotion. But he's saying things like, I'm not at all afraid. That's an emotional thing. I stay fully absorbed. That denotes, you know, where his life is at, his lifestyle. I'm fully absorbed in the Mahamrita, the ocean of nectar. But I have a concern. Something's on my mind. This is a person revealing where he's at. In this way, Prahlad Maharaj is giving you insight into the heart of a Vaishnava preacher. My concern, what's bothering me? And then he says, I'm simply concerned with love for them. This is Prabhupada's embellishment. Prabhupada's also revealing his heart. You won't find everything in the Sanskrit in terms of a reductionist mechanistic approach to the shloka, but Prabhupada is doing his bona fide parampara job of amplifying the verse so you can hear all the different notes, all the different chords. And so Prabhupada has put that, I'm simply concerned with love for them. This is our challenge. All right. Now, when we go to the end of the purport, we see Prabhupada giving some very interesting insights into the heart of a Vaishnava. The last four sentences or so. Just meditate on this. Prahlad Maharaj was happy and unhappy simultaneously. This is a wondrous statement revealing the depths of Vaishnava emotions, the Vaishnava emotional approach to life. He felt happiness and transcendental bliss because of his being Krishna conscious. Yet he felt great unhappiness for the fools and rascals who make elaborate plans to be happy in this material world. This is something to meditate on. Prahlad's feeling of simultaneous happiness and unhappiness. This is something beyond the material plane. But this is the kind of path we're meant to follow as servants of Lord Chaitanya, servants of Srila Prabhupada's mission. We are now being presented in this purport with the emotional realities of a preacher. Very fascinating subject matter. It's not at all kind of like sentimental religion. This is something much deeper. All right. Now, you've reached out. You've got a group coming every, maybe every other night, sometimes every day, as much as you're open, and you're cultivating them. You've made relationships with them. You might have even sold them a set of Bhagavatams because, you know, people are going to take from you what Krishna consciousness is according to what you give them. If from the very beginning you impress upon them to become Krishna conscious, you know, to become cool like us means, you know, you have a set of Bhagavatams and you chant, that's what they're going to think it is. If you're mental about these things, they're going to be mental about these things. But all they know is really what you teach them. So if you're just, you know, matter of fact, well, everybody has a set of Bhagavatams. You know, that's just, you know, it's the way it is, you know. They'll also think like that. if you radiate that kind of, you know, conviction, like the sky is blue, you know, everyone has a Bhagavatam's there. Could there be any doubts? So when everybody is, when all the staff is radiating that kind of assurity, that kind of confidence, oh, everybody's got a set, you know, yeah, I've done it, you know, this one's done it, that one. Then sets start to go out, and the people do have the money to buy a set of Bhagavatams. They just need the right kind of atmosphere. Similarly, the same thing with chanting Hare Krishna. It's no big deal. Yeah, we all do it, you know. And because these people have been interacting with you for a while, they want to do what you do. They notice, you know, that this person's so different from me. I'm so unsatisfied with myself. How can I be like this person? So in this way, the staff has, each staff member has a few people that he or she is working on and bringing them along. The last thing you want, though, is every staff member approaching a candidate, you know, how many rounds are you chanting now? Yeah, suppose you had to hear that, you know, from five persons every night you showed up at the center. Yeah. So you have to have some kind of strategy, you know, otherwise you kind of overwhelm the person and get on their nerves, you know. You know, five persons, one after another, how much are you chanting? Oh, you're up to four, okay, keep going. You know, all you need is one person every once in a while asking that kind of question. It's just about being sensitive, you know. Okay, now, what you're trying to do is to establish a culture. A culture, as I wrote down on the bottom of that page there I wrote, a culture based on chanting, reading Prabhupada's books, and caring. You want to instill that from the very beginning so that people rightfully understand that this is what Krishna consciousness is about. Krishna consciousness is about attentive chanting, absorption in studying Prabhupada's books, and caring for yourself and others. You'll be surprised. First, you have to teach people to care for themselves. Don't overlook this point. This period of Kali Yuga is so degraded that people don't actually care for themselves. That's why they've done so many crazy things to themselves, taking so much ecstasy, drug, so many random sexual encounters. They, by all this vice, by all this Kali Yuga degradation, they have lost respect for themselves. So you have to be a little skillful to see that. And how can you get someone to care for others when they don't care for themselves? And then you'll also have the professionals, those who are well-placed, you know, good karma, good career, good opportunities. Then you have to get them to care for others. So if you instill this culture from the very beginning, it's very easy for devotees to grow up in that kind of atmosphere. And then it begins to spread. And it becomes the norm. And then the older devotees, if there are any around, they realize it's still possible to be Krishna conscious. Look at these new ones. And they become enlivened. Otherwise, so many older devotees can become a little cynical, a little jaded, you know. Yeah, we all know how it is. You're fired up in the beginning, but then after 3 years, you're going to have problems. And I know one example. There was one devotee in a temple, and he was a young man. He became a devotee, and he was very enthusiastic. But then after about 6 months, in the temple, he went to the temple president and he said, you know, every day older devotees are coming up to me and saying, we know you're fired up now, but it's only going to last 2 years. We know you're enthusiastic now, but let me tell you, in 3 years you're going to be having problems. So make plans now to just take care of yourself after you pass through this enthusiastic stage. He said, I'm hearing this every day, all the time, you know. So finally, he just said, can you tell me, please, you know, Prabhu, President, can you tell me? I just want to surrender. Is it possible? This is how bad it gets, you know. But these older devotees, they actually are well-meaning, you know. They're just frustrated. They've hit some problems, and Maybe they haven't tried to help themselves, or no one's tried to help them, so they actually think they're being sincere and helpful. No. Don't get too fired up. Don't get too deep into Sankirtan, you know. It's only going to last a few years, and, you know, you should start thinking about yourself now, you know, and taking care of yourself now, and they actually mean well. But it's not the best thing if you're trying to spread Krishna consciousness. So therefore, I was saying yesterday, we have to separate the needs of the older devotees from the needs of new people and give everybody a fair chance to go their distance in Krishna consciousness. It's not that we're ignoring the older devotees, but we just want to give everyone an equal chance to go their distance. And we have to make other means for helping older devotees. I suggested, for example, at such an urban preaching center, you can have some nights for older devotees. But you can't mix the two. They just have completely different worldviews and completely different needs. So you can't deprive newcomers of a fair chance to go their distance in Krishna consciousness. You can't deprive them. You have to take care of the needs of both groups. So you always have to understand who you're in business for. Who are your customers? If you try to appeal to everyone, you're going to end up appealing to no one, except a small percentage of very fortunate persons who, you know, like there's some older devotees who they can sit in a lecture about how you're not the body 20 times and still be enlivened. Not everyone's like that, though, right? And there are a few new people who can sit through a lecture about, you know, Shakti Tattva, Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, and they just, yeah, it sounds esoteric, yeah, interesting. So, you know, there's always those exceptions, but generally you can't mix the two. They have two different sets of needs, legitimate needs. All right, so now you have your clientele, your group of persons who are coming by, and they probably got a Bhagavatam set for you, from you, and they're wondering, well, what do I do? They started chanting, and they'll be even chanting at least 16 rounds, and they're not thinking, I have joined the Hare Krishnas. That's the amazing thing. They just think, I'm doing what's good for me. I'm doing something that works for me. This chanting works for me. This reading of the books works for me. Never give them the impression they've joined an organization. It doesn't work these days. People are not into that. Everything is me-centered. My self-actualization. My self-realization. I come to this place, my place, and there I can actualize. I can realize. That's where it's at these days. There's not much idealism about join the Hare Krishnas and change the world. It was like that in the 60s and 70s. Not now. Now the world is within me. I want to realize me. And then have nice relationships. That's the big hang up these days. My relationships aren't nice. Everyone's in anxiety about it because there are so many new age books out about having relationships. And of course, in material life, you can't have proper relationships. I mean, even as devotees, we struggle with having proper relationships. What does it make if you're a non-devotee? So everybody's hung up about this. You know, it's no longer, do you have a nice car? Do you have a good job? Do you have a nice home? It's, do you have good relationships? So they have this paranoia. So this is what they're coming to your center for. They want to actualize themselves, and they want to experience good relationships. All right. Now, it's not necessary to tell them, by the way, now that you're chanting 16 rounds and reading Prabhupada's books, I'd just like you to know, you are a member of ISKCON. It's just not necessary at this point. You should let water seek its own level. You'll find some persons will be attracted to want to be functioning members of an institution. Some won't. So you just can't, like, just automatically assume, hey, you know, congratulations, welcome to the institution. You're chanting Hare Krishna. No, just let it be and watch. You'll see that there are some who really start to take a concern. well, you know, how's this place managed? And what's like the overall situation? And, what's happening in terms of like a worldwide international organization? There'll always be persons like that. And then there'll always be persons who don't want to hear anything about it. Hey, look, I'm just doing what works for me. I don't want to hear anything about organized religion. They'll change in the future as they become more purified. Most of them will want to make some contribution to Prabhupada's mission. But don't force it. That's my point. Don't force it. Let water seek its own level. In time, you'll see what is what. What's the best for each person. But so many times, I've seen that our preachers, our ISKCON leaders in cities, automatically assume, hey, guess what? You're a member of ISKCON. And, I was just doing what works for me, you know. I was hanging out with nice people, you know. I was reading nice books. So you have to, I feel, adopt a different tactic. And you actually will get what you want in terms of your institutional requirements much better that way. And the people will be more natural and unforced. They'll make a better contribution. So it's just there's nothing wrong with, you know, our having institutional needs. Every institution requires manpower, capital, woman power, and property. So there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you have to be a bit intelligent about how to go about satisfying those organizational needs. Let the people be. Don't be afraid to let them be for a while before you start categorizing them. The usual tendency is, ooh, look at that one. You've been chanting 16 rounds for 3 weeks. Okay, do we have a spot in the Brahmachari Ashram? God, the Brahmachari Ashram's full. What are we going to do? Oh, God, we need someone to wash the floors every morning, and no more space in the Brahmachari Ashram for this one. It's usually like that, you know? Immediately you start categorizing. Yeah. Well, what about this one, you know? Grihasta? You know, got a girl who wants to be married, you know, that center over there in Antwerp. Hey, maybe this guy might be the one. He's just a bhakta, but it doesn't look like Brahmachari material. Hey, maybe we ought to match him up, you know. All these kind of things, you know, go on. This categorizing, you know, without just letting them hang loose for a while. And so you can see how water seeks its own level. Now, I have another point I want to mention from Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you know, there's so much Prabhupada said that we've forgotten because perhaps we're just forcing situations into preconceived molds. Prabhupada said this in Los Angeles and in Melbourne, Australia. He said, better that persons don't come to the temple right away in terms of living. Better they stay at home, read the books, and then when they're fully convinced about taking up an ashram life of austerity, then they can come live in the temple. But he said, better they stay at home until they get that realization. Mm. Now, if they stay at home, as per Prabhupada's instructions, until they get whatever realization they're going to get, how to keep them Krishna conscious? That's why you have your urban center, a place where they can gather in the evening while they're getting their feet wet in Krishna consciousness. But here's another, this is something else you can do. And as you start getting serious people, this becomes a very attractive option. I call it the contemporary Vedic ashram. These are like halfway situations where persons who haven't decided yet where they fit in with Krishna consciousness and what lifestyle they'll have, brahmachari, grihasta, whatever. They can live together with others, preferably with an experienced devotee living with them. And in this way, it's like a halfway stage, and they can kind of sort themselves out without having to live with non-devotees. So this technique has worked very well because let's say you have a young man. You just can't, these days I've seen you just can't take a young man and just immediately throw him in the Brahmachari Ashram. I mean, life has been too wild and their minds just aren't focused enough to actually be of to be a bona fide member of a Brahmacharya ashram. But in the meantime, what can be done with them? You can have them live with other single young men, even older men, and they're responsible for maintaining themselves, and they can have a morning program every morning before they go to work or go to the university, and there may be an experienced devotee living with them. Mm. And in this way, even for a year or two, they can stabilize, and then you can get an honest reading about these persons. And they'll feel very good about themselves, because when they choose whatever it is they're going to choose, it's with full consciousness. They own the decision. This is very important, that they feel ownership of the decision for their particular lifestyle. Not that, well, the only way you become a Hare Krishna is to be a brahmachari or a brahmacharini, so yeah, what the heck, I guess you got to do that. This doesn't produce very healthy persons psychologically. You want them to understand all the options, understand the pros and the cons. So if you have this like contemporary Vedic ashram, it's like a halfway situation. They're chanting their rounds, they're associating with others like them, they're going to work or going to school, and the place is semi-regulated, you know, in terms of cleanliness. They get to find out about cleanliness and rising at a respectable hour, and it's not completely regimented. They're just the, how should we say, the basic preliminaries of regimentation, regulation there. There's no harm in keeping people, I've seen, there's no harm in keeping people in that situation, even for a couple of years. Now, just because they're in that situation doesn't mean that they're not productive for the society. There's so much they can do. They can preach in that situation, and indeed they're very effective preachers, because other people are going to be looking at them and seeing, well, you're becoming Krishna conscious, but you didn't like give it all up or, you know, become some kind of monk, weird monk or something, so it must be possible for me too. And because these people feel good about themselves in the contemporary Vedic ashram, they feel they're actually dealing with themselves where they're at. They spread that good feeling to others. And this is one thing you want to stress, that Krishna consciousness is not an excuse for hiding from yourself. This has been a big problem. You know, okay, I become a brahmachari, I become a brahmacharini, I become whatever, and I don't have to deal with, you know, as the current popular Sanskrit word is, my anartas. I don't have to deal with my hang-ups, I don't have to deal with my, you know, my atrocious tendencies due to past sinful life. You know, I just put on the cloth and Hare Krishna. That's like that for rare souls, but we've seen that for most people, they're going to have to solidly confront where they're at and where they want to go. And that takes some space and some time. Once they do that and start honestly dealing with themselves in Krishna consciousness, then they can do wonders. But as long as they're using bhakti to hide from themselves, and I think you know what I mean, it's not the fault of the bhakti yoga process, it's our Kali Yuga misapplication, that I'm externally doing all these rituals and devotional processes, but I'm not, my heart's not really into it, and I'm unsure about a lot of things, but hey, I gotta do something, and all these other people are doing something, so let me do the same thing. This goes on and on year after year, and it causes problems. So instead, I have devised a policy that you really have to take, in these beginning stages, from the very beginning, you have to take a deep look at yourself, understand the reality of what Kali Yuga has done to you. Understand how Kali Yuga has destroyed your finer sentiments, destroyed your body, destroyed your mind. Understand what sinful life does. Not that just, oh, I'm fried on parties, I'm fried on girls and guys. I think I'll take a break. Oh, I'll become a Hare Krishna. No. What Kali Yuga activities have done to you, how they've destroyed you, and then you've got to fight your way back to reclaim your self-respect and dignity. I do things like, for example, Leeladhar Gupta, whenever he's in town, I invite him to give an Ayurvedic seminar on what illicit sex life does to your body and mind. You should have him do that. Well, you know, next time he comes, it's pretty staggering. All the things you don't think about, because Western medicine doesn't teach this. Chinese medicine teaches it, and Ayurveda teaches it. What exactly illicit sex does to your physical and mental health and your intellectual powers. So, hearing it definitely puts the fear of the Lord in you. I don't have time. You ask him. Right? Mm-hmm. He'll describe it both for men and women. Yeah. Generally the men, it's more, whatever little knowledge is there, the men have some idea, you know, how it makes them very weak and spaced out in their mind. But not much knowledge is there about how it affects women, but Leeladhar Gupta can tell you all that. He can tell you how it's even Steven. It's, you know, everybody suffers. He can tell you about it from a physiological point of view. The Ayurveda talks about this. You know, how your lifespan is reduced, how your health is crippled, all from something you thought was so enjoyable. So, therefore, I recommend getting persons, when they first come to Krishna consciousness, to understand how Kali Yuga and the Kali Yuga society has wrecked their life. And therefore, they're going to have to work hard to reclaim their self-respect and self-integrity. Okay. Now, briefly, the other day I mentioned the sad fact that these days I found that half the people who approach Krishna consciousness need some kind of psychological counseling. And they also need, and more than that, maybe 70% need some kind of medical care because they've blown their health so much, they've destroyed their health so much through sex and drugs, that by the time they're 21, they're weak, their bodies are destroyed. I don't know if you've noticed that people who are coming to Krishna consciousness in their 20s don't have so much energy, they're weak all the time, they're frail. It's because of the lifestyle. And Dr. Gupta, he's a great one for explaining all that. The more sinful things get, the worse health people have. It's totally opposite of what the advertisements on television tell you. The more so-called fun in Kali Yuga you think you're having, the worse your health will be. So therefore, I've seen all around the world that persons who are coming to Krishna consciousness in their 20s, they're so weak, they're so frail. They don't have very much energy. That means if from the very beginning you get them in touch with a good alternative doctor, you can build a better future for them so they can contribute to the Krishna conscious movement. But if you're just recruiting, for want of a better word, batches of persons with weak bodies and wild minds, it's not going to be of much help for Prabhupada's mission. So therefore, what I do, I say from the very beginning, as soon as you're part of the contemporary Vedic ashram, do what you got to do to clear out the debris from your mind and do what you got to do to get your health together. And you'll be surprised how many persons have health problems because of so much sinful life in their teenage years. And if you don't deal with it at that point, it'll just carry this into their 30s, 40s, and you just wonder why I got a temple full of persons with no energy, you know, always going to the doctor and, you know, can't do this, can't do that. It's because they didn't look after their health problems as a result of sinful life when they were in their early 20s. Yes? Huh? They support themselves. See, in the contemporary Vedic ashram, they have to support themselves. They got to pay their way, which is another good thing. You learn that to be a Hare Krishna doesn't mean to be a loafer or a freeloader or what, I don't know what the French and Dutch words are for that, you know. What are the words for, you know, someone who just wants to live off of others and, you know, doesn't want to work and just, someone's paying my way. Let me join the ashram. No. In the contemporary Vedic ashram, you want to teach these persons responsibility for themselves. What are you going to do? Now, my policy is that for some time, if you're in countries where there's social welfare, like England, you know, down under, I don't know about Belgium or Netherlands, they have big social welfare programs where the government pays money, you know, if you don't have a job. Okay, so I let them stay on that for a while if they're really trying to deal with themselves in terms of their mental problems and medical problems. I say, okay, for a year, sometimes I've even seen it takes 2 years, just do what you got to do to sort yourself out. You know, your medical problems, your mental problems, so that if you choose to be a solid part of the institution, you can be of some value. Get it taken care of now. Okay, I don't mind if you live in the contemporary Vedic ashram and you're not going to school, you don't have a job. At least you're working on yourself to get yourself together so that you can make a proper choice what you're going to do in the future. So, yes, in these enclaves or these groups of persons who are not living in a temple ashram and they're not grihasthas, they have to pay their own way. You know, learn how to be responsible in Krishna consciousness. And it's a very good experience because they understand, even if I don't ever live in an ashram, I now have experience of being Krishna conscious outside the temple. So there's a good chance that some of them won't be living in temples, or if they spend some time in the temples, they'll go outside again. They know from the very beginning, I can do it if I know how to regulate myself. So in that way, you take away their fears of, you know, the either or. Either I live in the ashram or I'm in Maya. You take away that fear, which is big in their minds. They're always wondering, what about the real world? How will I interact with the real world? Krishna consciousness is a great shelter, but what about the world? So if you can show them that in a very nice setting, they can be Krishna conscious, even though they're not living in a temple ashram, this will give them a great source of strength and personal confidence. So then, what I do is after a while, I say, okay, you've been in the contemporary Vedic ashram for a year, year and a half. I don't mind waiting, because while they're in this situation, they are preaching. They're distributing books. They're helping out at the center. So I don't mind waiting. Then after maybe a year or a year and a half, I say, well, you know, what does it look like for you? Do you think you might want to be a brahmachari, or you think you might want to just be a solid congregational type and get married, or what do you think? And then they're able, by that time, to give you an honest answer, an educated answer. They've also become aware, gradually, of the wider ISKCON society, the controversies, the problems. Not that, you know, they come into the temple, you know, just green and, you know, naive and, ooh, I never knew it was a child abuse case, or, ooh. And then they're, you know, like, oh, wow, what kind of organization have I joined? This organization has problems. Well, every organization has problems, but, you know. So while they're in the contemporary Vedic ashram, they become aware of the ISKCON society and the pros and cons of living in an institution, and they can make a fully educated choice. Yeah, whatever, but I really want to be a brahmachari. That's what's meant for me. Or no, I don't think that's going to work for me. You know, I want to be a respectable householder. I'm not sure, and I would like to go on in a respectable bachelor or unmarried woman category for a while, and let's see what happens. As long as they're fully aware of their choices and the consequences of their choice. And meanwhile, regardless of whatever they choose, they're preaching. Because we have this policy that everyone should learn how to distribute Prabhupada's books, and that doesn't mean big quantities. Just everyone has that on their mind. In that way, you preserve the culture of people, getting sets because everybody's involved. Even if they only sell one set every 6 months, still, it's in the air and everyone likes to do it. And so it just perpetuates itself and everyone becomes a part of it. Another thing, as I mentioned yesterday, that I require everyone to do is that they have to develop habits of attentive chanting and reading Prabhupada's books from the very beginning. They take that as normal. This is the Hare Krishna movement. You chant your rounds with attention. There's nothing else. That's just the way it is. You read Prabhupada's books every day, at least an hour, hopefully 2 hours. That's just the way it is. If you present it that way to people, this is what it is, they'll accept it in that way. And I've seen it works. If you establish a culture, people just plug into that culture and take, you know, things as a given. Yeah, you're supposed to chant with attention. You're not supposed to, you know, do so many things while you're chanting. You're supposed to read every day. That's just the way it is. That's what it means to be a Hare Krishna. And then you get a whole group acting like that. You see, group influence is not always bad. It can also be good. So in this way, you establish a culture of good habits. And then you also become enlivened as preachers because you see, my God, Prabhupada's process works. Amazing. You really become enlivened. Well, amazing. I mean, you know, it actually changes people's lives. It still can be done today. And yeah, maybe I should try it myself. You actually get enlivened seeing that, you know, the basic elements of Prabhupada's program have such a potent effect when properly performed. It's a very interesting sociological laboratory. That's one of my interests, is seeing how people interact in certain circumstances and how they relate to Krishna consciousness and in such a way that Prabhupada's goals can be achieved. So it's very interesting to see. And then you have no doubts. Prabhupada, he knows what he's doing. Look, I just told these persons, do like this, do like that. They did it. And wow, they're becoming Krishna conscious. They're taking the Hare Krishna mantra seriously. They're taking Prabhupada's books seriously. They're not worrying about the language of Prabhupada's books. Is it outdated or controversial statements in the purports? They're just relishing. And then you get off the mental yourself. You get off the mental platform yourself. So it's very enlivening. All right. Naturally, there's, depending on where you're located, there may be a bit of pressure from temples and other aspects of the institution. We need manpower. We need woman power. Turn them over. Remember in the old days, how many bonus Sika points did you get this month? Remember that? How many men shaved up, you know? I used to get evaluated by points, you know. A certain amount of points for people, number of people who come to Sunday feast, certain amount of points for persons who stay overnight, and then you get bonus Sika points for each person who shaves up, you know. So you have to protect your people and just tell the administrators at the right time when they are stable and they're fully conscious of what they're doing, they'll be very valuable members of the temple community, those who choose to do that. Or they'll be very powerful brahmacharis because they have fully, with 100% consciousness, chosen to be brahmacharis. Now, since there are ladies here, what about ladies? You might have been wondering, I'm just talking about brahmacharis and like that. The reality of brahmacharini ashrams. I don't think we would be sexist, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure. I don't think we'd be sexist to say women living together in communal situations is not the easiest thing. Might I be entitled to say that? Would we accept Lakshmi Moni Mataji as the ordinary lady, Krishna consciousness. How many ladies here will ask him, Mataji, how many ladies here plan on living in the Brahmacharini ashram or whatever, for any kind of ashram for 32 years? Raise your hands. Okay, there you see the reality. But you'll get a higher percentage. That's my only point. That you'll get a higher percentage. That's the only point I'm saying. It's not about inferiority or superiority, God forbid. It's just about practicality. That's all. Preaching in the city means to be practical, to face reality without making value judgments. That's fair enough? Okay. But what are you going to do with all the ladies who come to Krishna consciousness? I mean, they are more than 50% of the population. You know, if you just ignore them, this is a tremendous waste of energy. So what I've tried to do, I've had some realizations about it, that ladies can be very productive if you just let them run their own life to a certain extent. Let them manage themselves in terms of their lifestyle, and they can live together in that way. Let them organize themselves, and then let them make a contribution for the preaching. So at some centers, this is what I do. Some nights are ladies' preaching nights. Other nights are men's preaching nights. Personally, I'm not into, we're getting into a bit of detail here, I'm not into mixing genders. Because, you know, it, at this point in Kali Yuga, it gets a bit volatile. If you've got unmarried men and women locked up together in the kitchen, you know, sooner or later, you know, it's just natural. But if you let the ladies have respectable living arrangements that they themselves make, which may be more important for that gender than for men, maybe, I'll say it like that, maybe. It gives them security of making their own home arrangements. They become very enlivened, and actually they become wonderful preachers, because generally it is said, that's how cautious I am, generally it is said that ladies like to nourish and nurture. Would that be fair to say?
Sure.
Everyone agrees? Ladies like to nourish and nurture. They're not so much naturally into the male competition thing. Can we also say that? To the extent that men are. Now, it may be that in today's job market, they have to take on those qualities, but I've heard from ladies who are in the rat race with the men that it's artificial, and they really, you know, they just freak out after a while. And if they may play the game while they're in their office, but then they come home and they take it out on their family, like, nah! So, I'm only telling you what I've heard, you know. I study people, I ask questions, and this is how I learn things. So they tell me, you know, just like New Zealand. New Zealand, there's no question of feminism in New Zealand. It's what is. It's like nothing. It's like the air. It's like the water. The government is mostly female. The prime minister is female. It's to such an extent that recently a man became head of the opposition party, and the Australian newspapers. Australia is the nearest country, a 3.5-hour flight away. The Australian newspapers joke, oh, New Zealand has a man in charge of the opposition party. We're so glad the country recognizes minority rights. So, in that situation, there's no way that we're going to, look real to society and properly engage in Krishna's service. Women who are coming, if you just say, okay, you know, here's a mop, here's a broom, you know, just wait around for the men to protect you and forget, it's just not going to work. They want to be dynamic. I mean, they're thinking, hey, we run the government, and then we come to Krishna consciousness, and all we get to do is mop the floor, you know. Regardless of what your ideology is, I'm just dealing with practicality. You get my point? I'm not getting into all the this or that. I'm just dealing with what is and how to deal with it. So, therefore, these urban preaching centers are a wonderful chance for women to exercise their wonderful nourishing and nurturing nature. So, Let them have free reign of the place for some days of the week, and you'll see amazing wonders happen. They love it to, you know, just, you know. So, Bhakta Bill, how's your chanting today? And Bill, I mean, he just thinks, wow, this is Krishna consciousness. Wow. You know? They really think that way. It's true. Wow. No one ever cared for me like this. These are angels from Vaikuntha. Because men, as a daily reality, have to deal with, very degraded, loose women who they will use, but they'll never trust, and they'll reluctantly marry. But here, they get to deal with Vaikuntha angels, and they're just like, they're mesmerized, like, it's just natural. So, and also the ladies see that they play a powerful preaching role in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Their propensity for nourishing and nurturing is utilized perfectly. So these are some things I've observed. And I've also had no doubts. I've seen, once you have ladies preaching powerfully, you're going to get a lot of men devotees. That's just the way it works, you know? So, you know, I just go with the flow, you know? It's the most powerful preaching force if you want to build a brahmachari ashram. And I work on a commission basis. I'm just joking. I work on a commission basis, you know. Okay, I tell the lady, if you meet a man who you might want to marry, fair enough. You can take your quota. I mean, you know, you got to be practical. And notice, I'm not making value judgments. You understand? I'm being practical. That, and many ladies feel secure in that way, that I trained this guy up from the beginning. I know where he's at. And so, you know, many wonderful marriages are coming this way. And they're not, you know, they're only going to marry one man. So in the meantime, they're bringing so many others to Krishna consciousness. So, you know, it's a win-win situation. So once again, I'm not making value judgments. I'm just going with the flow, dealing with reality, being practical, you know? If we have a movement in which ladies aren't happy and can't do anything productive, what does that say to the world? It's a joke. What are you going to say when they tell you, why is it that I can't do anything, you know, have any leadership or do anything meaningful when, the prime minister of the country is a woman, you know, this one's, you come to the Hare Krishnas to change the world, to make the world a better place, and we don't have anything meaningful to do. Except, you know, become a part of an internet conference or something. really. So we've got to make some adjustments for the sake of preaching, regardless of whatever your conceptions are. So I've seen that if you dovetail the ladies' nurturing and nourishment propensities, it does wonders. And ladies are peaceful when they have their own living arrangements, and they're not like institutionally organized living arrangements. They're, okay, live together, get a house somewhere, get a flat, run your own lives, take care of your own cars, pay your own bills, but preach. Oh, they love it. Yeah. It's like, hey, if I'm going to be single, then at least let me run my own life. If you want to run my life, then marry me. Otherwise, forget it. I mean, these are just things an insensitive person like me has noticed. Yeah, either give us the space or... So, you take the space. Take the liberty. I mean, otherwise, I think it's kind of cruel. If you don't have qualified husbands for them, or they themselves don't feel like marrying, then you have to have something productive for them to do. Otherwise, I find it's very cruel. It's like exploitation. So, if you make sociological living arrangements where people are responsible for themselves, and then just give them a chance to be productive for Krishna, wonderful things can happen. Yes?
Mm.
That's why, I'm just giving details now, but that's why there's always like some householder man around on the ladies' night or a householder woman around on the men's night. And by the way, these men are not brahmacharis. I don't recommend brahmacharis doing this kind of preaching unless they're just giving a seminar and leaving, because you have to associate very closely with everybody who comes. And if you're a brahmachari, it's just not going to work. So this is a job for either householders or bachelor men who haven't decided which ashram they want to be. I myself, as a sannyasi, I come in and out, but I just don't implant myself there day after day after day. I come in and out. I give a seminar. I talk to some people. I go. And I come again a few days later. But it's not the kind of thing for a brahmachari ashram. But you will get future brahmacharis from it who graduate from the contemporary Vedic ashram, and they'll be very wholesome, dedicated brahmacharis who have taken it up as a choice. Yes? There's none. Right. Right. Exactly. The only difference is that the men have an option to go into a brahmachari ashram. It's just the way ISKCON is set up right now, there are very few viable female ashrams. So I don't want to tell lies, I don't want to present to somebody an unrealistic picture of reality. Okay, lady, spend some time living with the other ladies and then we'll find a nice brahmacharini ashram for you. This, practically doesn't exist these days. The conditions are not at all attractive when they do have these ashrams. So therefore, if we're going to be honest, I think we should tell people that from the beginning, and they appreciate that. Look, the way it is now, if you want to have decent living arrangements and be satisfied, you're a lady, you're going to have to look out for yourself. Now, whether you or I like it or not, that this is the reality. In this whole country, in this whole continent, I don't see a decent place where I could recommend you as a lady could stay and do meaningful service. Sorry to say that. But anyway, here's an arrangement for you. You can do productive things as long as you like, I prefer to be honest about the ISKCON realities. And people, I find people appreciate that. Give them a fair vision of what the territory is like. No hidden surprises. No, false dreams, false hopes. And if they like to preach, if they like to care for others, they'll find that they got a better deal. Yeah, they got more opportunity to do things. Important things. And they can be very successful at that. So it's all about giving everybody a chance. Giving everybody the opportunity to be productive. All right, just looking over my list here. Another surprise that I found out, which I never intended to find out, was that young Indians under 35 are very attracted to this. They think it is cool. Now I can be Krishna conscious and Western at the same time. Not like my parents or my grandparents. So I've been shocked to find out that through this kind of preaching, we're getting quite a few young Indian men who are just not into Krishna consciousness being administered in the traditional Hindu way, but they like, doing it the Western way. And so there are quite a few young Indian initiated devotees who've come out of these circumstances. One is now one of the biggest book distributors in North America. His name is Shastrakrit. I think in April he was number two in North America. He's Indian. He's from South India. He stopped over in England a couple of months ago, and the British devotees were astonished. Someone, an Indian who's like a top book distributor of the world, they just couldn't see such a thing could happen. Because it's kind of different conceptions between different ethnic groups in Krishna consciousness about what you do. But, here, Like I say, this is an example. It's an Indian boy from South India, traditional book distribution. While he was in the contemporary Vedic ashram, he was finishing computer school or something, and his parents were satisfied with that. But he got a taste of book distribution, and he started pressuring me. I want to go to the States and be the number one book distributor. So I just called up Savas. I said, hey, I've got an Indian devotee who wants to be number one. Savas said, send him right over. We got a place for him. In 1 year, he's now number two and working on being number one. So I never expected this, you know, that young Indian men think it's so cool. Now, the ones I found that Indian congregational members over 40, generally, they want the traditional approach. But the younger ones, they just love this because they have this anxiety. How can I be, you know, Indian and Western at the same time? And we're fulfilling that need. So they just think it's cool as can be. So we actually get sizable groups of these Indian men and women in their 20s who are completely satisfied. I never expected that. It's an added benefit. So, yes? Yes. I haven't been in areas where there's a lot of them, but those that come, they like it also because it gives them a chance to be cool also and not be Krishna conscious in what they think is the rigid way, the ritualistic way. So, yes, that also is there. All right. Finally, I'll say that it's a well-rounded Krishna conscious person with goals in their life that attracts others. So if you want well-balanced people, we ourselves have to be well-balanced. And finally, I'll say that this approach attracts all ages. You'll find persons from 14 on up to 60, because they all can find a place in this kind of approach. That was very interesting. You come to a seminar, a Sunday feast program, you'll find all ages there, all feeling comfortable. So, I could go on, of course, and to say many more things, but I just want to give you a basic outline. You've all been a very nice audience. I just want to try to show you the possibilities of what can happen. And for the ladies, I'll comment that quite a few of these centers are run by ladies. Yes.
And so now, you know, there's kind of a cultivation of study, systematic study, which I think is extremely helpful. And so I don't, you know, have so much of a problem about the shining eyes. I'm not going to have something along with this if it's a well-run thing. But I do feel that women need, as well as men, to have that opportunity to systematically study for the public works under the tutelage of somebody.
Yes, yes, that's all included in the package. In fact, most of the GBCs who have come through such places have said that these devotees are more well-trained and more well-read than devotees in the temple because so much weight is put on their shoulders. You have to get yourself together. You have to be responsible to yourself. You have to learn Prabhupada's books. You have to preach. Everybody gives class. Everyone has to give class, men and women. Everyone has to give a Sunday feast lecture. No gender distinctions. Everyone has to learn how to cook. Everyone has to learn how to play musical instruments, if at all possible. No gender distinctions in these roles. Everyone has to learn how to manage. So, in other words, the door is wide open for everybody. So, yes, the training that you're mentioning is there in these ashram situations. That's why these ashrams are supervised by older devotees. This is all part of urban preaching, training up a group of dedicated servants of Lord Chaitanya. Yes. Four in New Zealand, and we're starting now, maybe doing something in England, and then I'm advising in different spots around the world for those who want to do that. Yes, yes. No. Not all of them are big enough for that. So sometimes they send people to another place while they're developing. Oh, my standard of success is if three sincere people come to hear about Krishna, I consider that wonderful. It's not a quantity approach, it's a quality. No, no, if three people come to hear about Krishna. Otherwise, you know, for financial support, we're always trying different things to keep, you know, like yoga will average from 20 to 30 a night, you know. We're always concerned with that for financial support. But if three people come to hear about Krishna, just like we mentioned, Charanarayana here, she was the only guest at a Krishna conscious workshop, the only guest. So anyone who comes to hear about Krishna, they get, you know, we treat them like they descended from Vaikuntha. We don't just say, oh, only one person came, only three persons came. That, yeah, they were really interested, but still it was only three. Nah. Yes? From the very beginning, in Sunday feasts. Yes. I'm heavy on lifestyle preaching. That's a main part of Sunday feast lectures. Your lifestyle is hellish. You're destroying yourself. You got to get yourself together. That's a very attractive preaching platform because they know it's true. Come on. You're 16. You know, you've had 10 boyfriends already. You're not satisfied. Just put the cards on the table. That's what's going on out there these days. Yes? You're always welcome. You're always welcome. But hopefully we'll have something. I'm just talking to Sachi Nandana Maharaj now. We're making plans for various parts of Europe. So hopefully you have a nearby example. It'll take some time. Yes? Do you what? Their needs are minimal. That's a detail according to the country you're in. Not necessarily. It depends on which country you're in, what the system is of the country, what's acceptable by the people. You also have Sankirtan, book distribution going on. Obviously, people have to take care of themselves. So, yes? I do that myself. And then once a culture is established, the culture perpetuates itself. You know this word, perpetuates itself? You have to train them. Once the culture is in place, then things start to roll. Not everyone's going to fit into this category, though. You know, it's not everybody can just do everything. But a good percentage of devotees can do this kind of thing. Not everyone. It doesn't mean they're not good devotees because they can't do this or don't want to do it. It doesn't mean they're not good devotees. But you'll find quite a few who do. And now Kadamakana Maharaj is here, and we are going to go because he has the last session of his wonderful seminar. Hare Krishna, glory to Prabhupada. But he just got a taste of, you've got to understand.